Impact. Wasn't clear enough. Impact! That's what presenting is all about. It's about impact, the ability to take your voice, to take what you know and spread it so that you can have a larger impact, to make a bigger dent in this world. And while we're kind of taking the subset of, so you want to present at Ignite, kind of the skills that go into this translate into just about everything else you do to influence people. There are really two very straightforward steps that you need to follow. Number one, you've got to earn the right to be heard. Most people are going to give you 60 seconds to plea your case. Why should I listen to you? And in those 60 seconds, you've got to win. And then once you get the audience, you're like, oh, crap. Now I actually have the hour to talk about it. Now I've got to land my point. Which means I've got to understand my point. So while ostensibly it's all about presenting at Ignite, I think that these are core and fundamental skills to be effective as an influencer. So that's what we're here to talk about today. How can you do better at influencing people? And I'm guessing some of you are also here because you're like, you know what? I can do better than these schmucks on stage. Some of them are not very good. And that's the other thing we want to teach you how to do. How do you get up here and take your personality, your knowledge, your way of communicating with the world and make it bigger? Hopefully this will be a fun session. It can be as interactive as you want it to be, right? This is live, this is not a recording, so you get to talk during it. But let's have a conversation about how you can get up on whatever stage you choose and start making a bigger dent in the world. So we're going to kind of go through a suite of conversations here, really thinking through how do we get to the end point. And it all starts with earning the right to be heard. How do you get your session in the first place? So we're going to talk about a couple of things that you should be thinking about when it comes to earning that initial right to be heard. Number one is you've got to start building your reputation. The decision for who is going to be listened to is determined by humans, not by any kind of big data crunching and blah, blah, blah. There's always a person in there. And that person is nearly always going to be interested in, well, who the heck is this person? Why would I care about them? Are they credible? Are they going to stink up my stage by mumbling and talking and, oh, yeah, and then we're going to do now this. And if you look at this slide here, let's all admire the slide together. We can see there's a man, and he clearly is slightly bearded. They want to make sure that doesn't happen. It turns out that does kind of happen rather a lot. How do you build your reputation so that people know who you are as a presenter and as a technologist? It really starts with being authentic. You need to figure out who you are. What is it that you do? What is your superpower? And how can you convey that superpower? But if you don't understand it, it's really hard to convey it. For example, my superpower, I believe, is I am not the world's best technologist, but I'm good enough. I'm not the world's best speaker, but I'm good enough. And I'm not the world's best writer, but I'm good enough. Turns out there are very few people in this world that can do all three, and I can. So that's my superpower. I understand things. I love super deep, nerdy things. You start injecting the personality and figure out what that is, and then you try to figure out how do I make that reputation. And it starts with getting on stage in the event of I want to be known as a speaker. Whatever size stage you can, become more of a known entity so that people are seeing you. Find opportunities, because there are lots of them. Everyone's always looking for opportunities to have someone come and talk on some topic. Volunteer for those. Start them up if they don't exist. If something you believe should exist doesn't exist, just go freaking make it. What's holding you back? That builds your reputation. become credible. Start a blog if writing is your thing. If writing is not your thing, please don't start another terrible blog. If writing in very short sentences is your thing, start a Twitter feed. Start to get a following. Start to get people to follow you. And get to know the people who do that. When you look at an event like Ignite, most of the people who run it, turns out they're Microsoft employees. Find out who they are and get to know them. Build your reputation with them so that they have an understanding of who you are. But the first step is figure out how you can start to become more well-known in the community so that when people see you, like, who the heck is that? The reality is, for good or for evil, given a choice between the guy who's always okay, he's never going to do a bad job, he's also never going to do an amazing job, is more likely to be picked than the person who's a total unknown, who could be amazing, but he also could be terrible. The okay person almost always gets the nod. How do you get to the point where people know you might be more than okay? Reputation matters. But it's not the only thing that matters. What also matters is, what is the track trying to do? And when you talk about events that are being put together, you can start to think about what some of the themes are and figure out what fits. For example, here at Ignite, there are two tracks that I have been speaking in. One of them is the Windows track. It probably doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, might be talking about Windows 10 stuff at about this time of year, knowing the ship date when that was coming. There's also a track on making yourself more awesome, which this track is part of. Then you can think about creative ways to fit in there. But you've got to understand what the track is trying to achieve. And rather than going into me kind of giving my perception of it, I wanted to take a break and invite an actual track owner to talk about some of the things that he looks for to kind of give that perception. So it's no longer just, so here's how I reverse engineered the system, but the person who invents the system, Anthony Willis, owns the, was it Windows client track, or what's it called? Some track that's Windowy. And I can actually pull up your slide if you want. Go on here, see, and some of the feedback I got was of everything teed up and ready, and here I am yet again failing on that matter, but that's okay because I did it relatively quickly, and hopefully you'll all forgive me for that.
How do you
build together a track? What's the process you go through, and what are you looking for, and how much? Let's start with that.
Sure. So the first thing I do is I look at, what are they looking for me to present? And so that's always in context to what products are shipping, what's the trends out there. So for example, in the client track, you might think, in May we're doing a call for content. And then, that's when I'm looking to actually put this thing together. That's actually not true. When I'm doing a May call for content, I've already figured everything out what I want to do. I'm just looking for things to slot into holes. And so months before, in the case of this track, I'm looking at things like Windows 10, because I know Windows 10 is going to be shipping. I'm looking at things like devices. What are the latest devices going to be? Because that relates to the Windows 10 track. Security is a big deal at the moment. Cybersecurity as it pertains to Windows and the ecosystem. Deployment, cloud and authentication. And browsers. We're going to get whole new browsers. We've got Edge coming with Windows 10. So there's going to be some interest around that. And then weaving that into a story. And so so as you can see here, I've actually got the order in which I actually want to start looking at things as well. And so when I'm looking at this particular track, this is back in February before we'd even asked for content, before I'd even looked for speakers, I was basically saying, well, how am I going to break up my track? How many sessions am I going to put in there? And what sort of story do I want to tell? And so for me, I'm looking at an introduction to Windows 10 for Enterprise, which hopefully you guys all attended, an introduction just to Windows 10 Consumer, and a devices session. And then I've broken up those four areas, and I've sort of said, I want to do some these number, give or take. And then right at the end, I want to basically say, let's actually try and tie the whole thing together into a single cohesive story about how you would use all of this stuff to actually do something. And that session's happening tomorrow, and you've got a taste of that with that AD join. They did that in the keynote, where you take a brand new machine. So tomorrow, the guys are actually going to cut open a brand new box, and they're going to build a complete enterprise machine in less than 60 minutes, including applications, everything, the whole nine yards, and explain what's happening under the hood. And that's putting all of that together at that point. And so when I'm looking at creating a track, it's not just individually what am I looking to convey, but what story am I going to tell, and how do I tie something together at the at the end. So that's in effect what I'm thinking, and that's happening 3 months before speakers are even getting asked to do anything, right? That's how I start.
Great. So with that kind of, I know one of the things you also often do is you also have some people in mind from a legacy perspective.
Absolutely.
I'm going to have this person come in and have this person come in. So obviously, right, if you want to speak at Ignite and you're already speaking at Ignite, right, it's easy to just say, hey, I can come back. How do people break in? So when you have someone who's never spoken before, how many slots are left after kind of what gets predetermined?
So first of all, you don't be a dick, right? I mean, if you're a dick and you speak and you end up being a dick, I mean, you're not getting invited back. So if you actually get in, don't be a dick to the track owner. That's a real good. That's really good advice.
Or excessively high maintenance.
Or excessively high maintenance, and we won't talk about that. We won't talk about that this year. So what am I looking for? So for example, I have some people in my track that I just invite back year after year after year because they just slam dunk it for me. Like Mr. Jackson here is an example of that. So, you know, he's a part of the App Compat team. You know, if you go back to Windows 7 days, I think that was when we first started having...
Might
having
have been Vista.
Was it Vista?
Could have been.
Yeah. I thought we weren't supposed to talk about that. What's that?
I didn't write Vista. I just talked about the app compat story.
Blame Mr. Jackson for Vista. That's perfect. So Chris at the time was the app compat guy, right? You know, and people were moving from XP to Windows 7. We sort of ignore Vista for a bit. And so that was actually, app compat was a massive part of that. App compat on Windows, app compat for Internet Explorer, going from 6 to anything. XP to anything was just hard work, right? You probably all remember that project. And so if you go back to the Windows 7 client track, there was a big app compatibility a theme to it, and it was a big, you know, why should you be doing this? What's your mobility strategy? It was a whole bunch of that sort of stuff, and so I got to meet Chris, and he slam dunked it for me that year. So every year when I'm putting something together, you know, first and foremost I say, what do you think? Am I being a dick with this client track? And he's normally like, yep, but that's okay, we'll run with that. But basically what happens is I then say to him, what in here would you be interested in to talk to? So Chris is now in the cyber team, cybersecurity team primarily, and so he's been and he's also still on App Compat, and so for him, browser and security are the two things that he's very keen to talk on. So he sort of gets first pick, right? And then the other person I go to is Michael Niehaus. I don't know if you know Michael. I know you know Michael Niehaus, but you know he's actually the guy that actually wrote MDT in his spare time at some point. If you don't know what Microsoft Deployment Toolkit is, well,
we actually paid him to do that. It wasn't a spare time activity.
Wasn't he? He lied to me then, the bastard. He's not back next year. Michael Niehaus. So obviously he's probably going to be interested in the deployment aspects of stuff, right? And he's in marketing now, but he's still one of the guys for deployment, I think, in Microsoft.
Well, that's actually a good point. I want to riff on that. That makes it tough if you're a deployment person and you know you're going head to head with Michael Niehaus, who wrote the toolkit that you might be talking about. It's going to be harder to get a session.
Yeah.
So you've got to think of what's the special sauce that I have, because I can't just come up and give you a how-to on MDT. It's actually been done here, in fact, by other folks, when we had such a need to talk and tell the story because deployments were so far behind that we were willing to just hit you over the head with it. But when thinking about what's the content to talk about, you need to think about what can you talk about that other people aren't going to be there. Know what the field is, and you can start to see that by looking at on Channel 9, where you see all of the events and say, oh, this person seems to come back every time, that might not be the thing to go and talk about.
Totally. And so another person is Alan...
Birchall.
Birchall, thank you, who's one of the two GPO MVPs in the world. So, you know, probably not good to go head-to-head on GPO with him. So, and he's someone I invite back. So I basically start with that. And then what I do is that probably covers just under half my track at that point. So I've got half my track left to fill, and I've actually got gaps. Now, generally those folk fit into that middle piece because they're deep technical experts, very good at what they do. Generally, they're there. So at that point, I'm starting to say, well, who, you know, what sort of story am I looking to tell? And for that, you're sort of talking to the marketing folks a wee bit about, well, what is it? What's the story we're trying to tell around, say, Windows for the world, for the planet? So you know, what are we trying to actually pimp or pitch? Maybe pitch is a better word than pimp. But this isn't recorded, is it? So, once again at the end, you know, I'm sort of looking to tell a big story. And so those are some of the areas that I sort of look for more local folk. Because the other thing I'm interested in is I'm actually interested in finding great folks here who can raise their own profile. And so I'm always, every single time we run this, I'm always looking for one or two people to basically come in and be able to tell, help me tell this story, and then tie in with the folks that are my sort of mainstays.
And that's actually an important concept, which I've not seen people take a lot of advantage of. So I don't run a track here. Obviously, I'm a bit remote for that. But I do run a track at some of our internal conferences. And, you know, we, you know, very specifically are looking to identify new talent. But very few people reach out to us and ask for it. Because if we see a really promising sounding submission that's just not quite ready for prime time, we'd love to work with you to develop mm-hmm. that. And as Ann says, and it's almost always true, we want to keep bringing in new talent because the audience, right, particularly folks who come year after year after year, don't want to just see the same faces saying the same things. They want some familiar faces that bring some continuity. If they're good, it's helpful. But they don't want only the same people telling the same message. They want that diversity across a number of different spans, and they will work with you if you reach out early enough.
Exactly. So a good example is Daniel Bobise. I gave him one session last year, and I was like, well, let's see how he goes on this. He whacked it out of the park. He was actually one of our top speakers. So he got two sessions this year, and he got a lot more freedom as to what he wanted to do. I said, what do you want to do this year, Daniel? He goes, oh, I'd love to do blah. And I'm like, think again. Have another crack. So, what's that? Actually.
Hey, you have to wave your hand like this. You'd like to talk about this.
Exactly right. So you know, I said, here's the framework by which I'm looking to do. I mean, in here, what actually makes sense to you? And so he picked out that real-life example. So he's sitting there, he's doing with, and I'm trying a new guy this year from Old House. Forget his name. That's the one, thank you. So he's basically going to be sitting with Daniel Babayas to cover that one off. It's not you there, is it? The lights are too bright. Oh, good. I'm not dissing you while you're sitting there. So the other one, the other person is Koz. I don't know if you know Andrew Cosmodakis. Anyone not know him? Well, there are lots of people. I've had a few nods, right? But that means that he's actually known by folks. So he's actually, you know, I've actually approached him and said, mate, you're actually a bit of a powerhouse in this particular area. You know, is this something you'd be interested in speaking? There's an example of someone whose reputation has got to me, and I'm interested in actually saying, well, what would you be interested in talking about? Because I know that you have a big interest in the cloud and auth, you know, auth space, right? And so he's actually going to come in and do a talk because I've invited him to. There's an example of that reputation in motion.
Yeah, and that's a current that's happening right now, which is a very broken current. It hopefully will go away very soon, but it actually happened in the U.S. this year. Is Ignite North America, they did not take submissions for the content you wanted to talk about. They said, let us know if you'd like to be a speaker. You were a good speaker in the past. And then they would tell you what you'd be talking about. Talk about micromanagement. You know what? I don't even trust you to come up with ideas. I have all the good ideas. Catastrophically stupid way to run an event. Nonetheless, they ran an event that way. And Australia is talking about doing a very similar thing. Apparently, they didn't learn how catastrophically stupid that was and figured they'd give it a go, too. That may happen in some events, so you want to be careful of that, but that means you really have to rely on reputation and getting to know the people who run it and networking, right? And chances are, if you want to be a presenter, you like talking to people, right? So networking shouldn't be hard, but it's more important than most people think to say, let's work this out and let's be willing to, you know, have me get ideas from you about what's valuable to you, because I know that you are charged with responsibility for telling a story.
Definitely. And so for example, 40% of these are what we want to do. 40% of the sessions of the 16 sessions, including this one actually, are what we want. And so I'm actually saying, I want to do this. Now there's these gaps. I'm saying, now give me ideas for how you can help tell the story. And if people come back and say, you're an idiot, you know, you need to not do that and do this, then I'm going to listen to that, and that will change things. But, you know, fundamentally, we are trying to tell a story, and we're looking to actually fit in. So if you're randomly submitting sessions, just saying, oh, I'd love to talk about this, and you randomly submit it, the chances of actually getting, and you haven't spoken to a track owner, the chances of getting accepted are how much, Terry? Zero, exactly. So there's a bit of an example.
Excellent. Well, thank you. I think I like hearing that from other folks who hear that, because I think it ends up being really valuable. So thank you for coming up and talking about that. Let's kind of carry on. This is super important. Understand what's going on. We'll wait for sway to gradually lower. I'm trying a new thing today, which is the new sway tool, to see how that works as a presentation aid. And the final thing to start thinking about is, again, this working through collaboratively, build yourself up, sell yourself to the track lead, understand what's happening, and be really well connected to figure out how do we collaborate together to deliver something great where it's a win-win scenario. Eventually, someone's going to pick me, right? And that's really the goal. It's kind of rinse and repeat and figure out what those things are, take smaller events. Assuming I've been chosen, then the task comes of actually building out a terrific talk. And there are a couple of aspects of figuring this out that I think are really important, and we'll kind of go into some of the details of this. But it starts off with, how are you going to present whatever it is you're putting on the screen? And honestly, that's where most people start. I'm going to start by building out the PowerPoint, and then I'll figure out what to say. And typically what I say will be all of the words that are on the PowerPoint. That is a terrible way to build a presentation. To be absolutely clear, you should never build the presentation. You should start by building, and we'll talk about some of the details of how to do good storytelling and getting a clear path through, but starting with build PowerPoints and make them beautiful and execute them and spend hours and hours on PowerPoints and maybe build a talk is really not the way to do it. Think about what you're putting on the screen as a way to visualize what you're thinking about. It is there to be, hey, when the person nods off and goes down and they get up, that by looking at the screen, they can figure out what the hell is this person talking about now. Oh, I see, they're talking about that. I can get back on track. That's its purpose. And always think about the purpose of what you're doing, what construct you're using. Your goal is to communicate. Your goal is to drive change. If what you're doing is checking a box, must have this, instead of helping to reinforce your final path to the destination, don't do it, right? Understand the rules and break them where it makes sense to break them is kind of the general rule. Don't break them because you don't know them. Know them, but break them where it makes sense. I am not using PowerPoint because to me it made more sense to do it as a sway. I broke a rule. I did it on purpose because it helped me have a much more smooth and fluid conversation. It's just aids. It's a picture and a few words so you can understand what we're talking about. And when it comes to presentation, if you do eventually make a deck, a couple of bits of advice that I would give on there. Number one, if you possibly can, I have personally found the best decks are the ones that have zero words on them, just pictures. They help illustrate, or maybe one. I did one presentation where the only things I had on the screen was a hashtag. Every single vignette in the talk had a hashtag associated. So if you'd look up, you'd see the hashtag and you'd go, oh, it's that. And that was the only thing on the screen. But if you're going to put words, right, and you're going to use the typical bulleted format, don't go into multiple lines ever. Don't go above five lines. Don't go above five words per lines or the rule of fives. Keep it simple and then start reducing, 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 and don't feel tied to reading it. We have, you know, it's interesting. Like, if you want to look at great presentations, don't look at Microsoft's executives because we are not really renowned for our great executive presentations. We actually have one of our execs who's gotten a lot better lately, with one exception. He cannot resist the temptation to have read to you every word on his slides. He's made it better by reducing the number of words, but you can watch and write, and you'll see that there's never a time when every word doesn't get read. Think instead of what can you put on the screen that's going to supplement your message and build it that way. Communicate and get people to really think, get them in the mindset. And the same is true of demonstrations. I find that there's nothing more powerful than actually seeing something in action. Way more impactful than simply, you know, going through and giving a bunch of slides talking about it. And you've probably seen a few times this week where you see here's the talk, here's a list of features, and maybe we'll show you a couple of them as a special bonus, but we don't go through it that way. I personally like to do some of my talks as pure demo end to end. You've got to be careful. I went to too much of an extreme with this. You can make it so that you miss an opportunity to illustrate something more clearly with a slide. Don't, you know, you wouldn't want to say, I'm going to reject all slides and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've seen, you know, I have a track that I run, and within the track I have a particular session that goes at every single internal Microsoft event that's called hardcore debugging. Debugging itself is usually something that's pretty deep, so when you talk about hardcore debugging, you're talking super nerdy. And we built this informal rule within the group of folks who did it. We never use slides. We only have the debugger on the screen all the time, every single time. It's really difficult to illustrate an architectural concept with a debugger. Sometimes you've got to draw the boxes. Yeah. Actually, I can't, because we are constrained in the content that we can include inside of a Microsoft event. But you can see me afterwards, and you know, Ant actually has that as a full motion video. I don't know why there's a banana there. Know when you have a banana on your screen is another tip that I would say. If there's a banana on the screen, be aware of it. So back to the point, right? We had this informal rule, only demos, never show a slide. We had a problem. I need to showcase an architectural concept, which is really hard to do with nothing but demos. And so I had a presenter who was like, you know what? I'm going to obey the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law, for all of the right reasons. He needed to show the concept, so he took a PowerPoint slide and digitized it into ASCII art, and then wrote a custom debugger extension to output the ASCII art of the slide, which I thought was quite clever for doing it that way. So use demos, but use them to the point where they make sense. Use slides where they make sense to visualize, but always be thinking about how can I make it real, and keep asking yourself and be mindful of the fact that you're going to have the curse of knowledge. You already know this material. And you probably can't remember everything about what it's like not to know that material. Because if you're on the stage, you're probably an expert. That means you're going to have to show other people and say, were you able to understand this? You're going to have to do walkthroughs. When it comes to preparation, you're going to want to be giving this to everyone who will listen. And there is nothing that can ever take the place of relentless, painful, excruciating preparation. In fact, if you want a rule of thumb, you should allocate an hour of your time for every 1 minute of your presentation to do rehearsals by yourself, to other people, online, set up Skype meetings, get people to listen and take feedback on how to do that, and make sure that you're actually communicating the points that you want to make. And with that, you'll have your talk all prepared, right? And I'll kind of go into some more details that'll feed back into the preparation part, into some of the tips that I see from what I have found to be absolutely killer talks. Yes, sir. If you want to deliver an amazing talk, that's really what it takes. So this talk, as an example, this is a talk that I've been giving internally at Microsoft for about the past 2.5 years. And we vary it every single time, because obviously we don't want to just come up and repeat ourselves the same thing every single time. But it ends up being this giant body of content that gets rehearsed over and over and over again. And when we start dealing with some of the new content, it's the very, very same thing, right? You've got to make sure you understand how long it takes, because you make some slides, prep up some demos, you kind of get your roadmap of how you're going to wander through. You have no idea how long it's going to take. And the first time you go through it, you're going to get done, you're going to click the stopwatch, and you're still not really going to have an idea of how long it's going to take, because you're going to have made mistakes along the way that you've got to correct. You're going to have gone too fast, gone too slow, not seen it. If you can, record yourself. It is excruciating to watch yourself present, but you should anyway. But that kind of relentless preparation is what makes for a great talk. And if you watch some of the people who are truly phenomenal, they are doing that or more, right? If you look at, I think Steve Jobs was one of the greater technology presenters we've ever had, and he would just block off his calendar for weeks prior to big events. And that was all rehearsal, all preparation, all getting ready. Right? We don't at Microsoft always follow those rules, and you can tell. You can tell who's up there and who is absolutely got it down rock solid. And you start to see presenters who can do it, because what happens is with that preparation, you can roll with the punches. People can point out bananas on your screen and you can be like, roll, okay, there's a banana. Now back to my story. I have seen people who have had something go wrong right in the middle of their presentation that is catastrophic. For example, my friend Eduardo was giving a presentation and suddenly the internet and the power went out in the room. Talk about a handicap. Because now there's really nothing but him and his laptop screen. You know what he did? Didn't break a sweat. He's like, okay. Hops down, takes his laptop, turns it around, says, it's kind of small. Sorry, it's hard to read. Apologized. And carried on with the presentation. Because he knew exactly what he was going to say. If you want to talk about another extreme, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this. True story. There was a hypothetical person who may or may not have looked a lot like me, who was at a conference in Vegas, who ended up being Las Vegas in the U.S., which they call it Sin City, ended up being out all night long, you know, drinking, dancing, having a really great time, and all of a sudden realizing, oh, I have a talk in 37 minutes. Quickly showered, went directly to the room, stood up, timer went off. Boom, gave a presentation, number 7 presentation in the entire conference. It was all over. Thank you very much. Whoa. Because it was all, at that point, muscle memory. And that's what it comes down to. Everyone thinks you want it to be, you know, oh, I want to not rehearse so it kind of sounds more off the cuff and doesn't sound stuffy. It doesn't work that way. It sounds awkward and unrehearsed when it's unrehearsed. When it's well rehearsed, it sounds like, oh, it's very smooth and it's very easy to listen to. And that's what you're looking for. And the thing to rehearse most, and this is my first point, and this is what so often gets mucked up. The rehearsal you should focus the most on, in my opinion, is the first 60 seconds. 1 minute. I give it well more than an hour of presentation. Even if it's just flailing my arms, bang, impact. That was a lot of thought into that first 60 seconds. I wanted to get your attention. I wanted to be the crazy American banging on desks. I kind of hurt my hand a little bit. But the first 60 seconds, everyone will give you for free. Everyone. The same 60 seconds you get to introduce yourself. You get those 60 seconds for free. After that, you've got to earn it. And this is a mistake I see people make all the time. What's the first thing most people will come up and do? They're going to tell you their name and they're going to give you their CV. I'm so-and-so, I do this, I've been doing this for X amount of time, blah, blah, blah. Wasting those precious first 60 seconds. Now, if you can come up and say, hi, I'm Mark Rusinovich, and ladies, I'm single now, then saying your name might be useful. If that's not the case, you're burning your 60 seconds. I haven't even told you my name yet. I'm Chris Jackson, by the way, if anyone cares to know. Because it doesn't matter who I am. What matters is, am I going to give you something you want to hear about? Which means I've got to convince you that I do. I have something to say that might add value to you. I'm going to come in and say, this is all about impact. You want to change the world? I'm going to tell you what I've learned about changing the world. And I've been pretty successful at it. Could I be better? Of course. But I've been pretty successful, and here's what I've got to say. I was thinking like, oh, well, I'd like to have more impact. I'd like to be on the stage. I'm less of a schmuck than you. I can get up there. Now all of a sudden there's something in it for you. It's real important. I need to figure out what's in it for you. Now what's in it for me? I'm not here to say blah, blah, blah. Here's how I talk. Here's how I do this. Here's how me. That, in fact, is a mistake that I see made all the time. Us versus them. We did this. You can now do this. Now we did this. No, we're all in this together. We all want to be on the stage. You know how I got up here? By accident. I had a job. I ran the AppCompat SWAT team from 2006 to 2012. I was required to talk. I got on the stage. I'm like, hey, this is pretty cool. It wasn't planned. You got to keep going and earn that right. The first 60 seconds are the most important 60 seconds and earn the right. The same with your submission, the 60 seconds, the intro, the elevator pitch, what gets you in the room in the first place. That initial thing is so, so critical. In fact, I would say the same thing there. When I think about the way that people submit their submissions to attract, just to kind of backtrack and apply the same principle there, most of them spend a bit of a time thinking of a title, I'm going to talk about this, and then they kind of ramble a bit in the abstract. Well, this is kind of cool to talk about, and I'll talk about this, and blah, blah, blah. And what you have to understand is you're dealing with a track owner who has to wade through piles of things. And if it looks like you couldn't be bothered to spend time earning the right to be heard in your submission, well, then why would they keep talking to you? But the people who look like, hey, this person spent a lot of time and thought and came up with a very crisp aspect. It may not be exactly what I want. I may have some feedback, but they've now earned my attention because they focused their time on that initial foray, the elevator pitch. Here's why I want you in there. In this case, it's two audiences, the track owner first, the attendee second. I got to hit both of them. That might be even harder. So earn the right to be heard. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter what you've done, unless you need the credibility, but you can build the credibility by giving them great information, I think, a lot more effectively than by reading them a list of what you've done. The thing I always like to think about as well is that I'm not going up there with the job of teaching a class. And particularly in the case of an event like Ignite, think about what happens at the conference. How many of you are running around with notebooks taking a whole bunch of notes? I see a couple. It's not zero. But most people are going to an event about HoloLens, even though we don't have HoloLenses here for some reason. And they're going to an event about how to write C++ programs to do gaming on Windows Phone. And they're going to a session about how to deploy Windows 10 to tablet devices, and then they're going to a session about how do I, you know, go into Azure and deploy custom VMs on an ad hoc basis using nothing but PowerShell scripts launched from a platform as a service, blah, blah, blah. And then they all go and get really, really hammered, and they go to bed, get a couple hours of sleep, and rise up and do it all again. Rinse and repeat. By the end of the week, do you think you're going to remember, oh, here's the step-by-step plan for doing this thing on Tuesday? Probably not. But here's what you're going to remember. That was freaking cool. I need to go look at that up. They may write down a couple of notes. Go get this book. I love that, by the way. If someone puts a book on the screen, and I'm like, this guy inspired me to want to do what he does, and here's a book that's going to tell me how to do what he does, I'm almost always immediately on my phone, put it in Amazon, and I go, put this on my wish list, go grab that book later. Here's some action. But you're trying to inspire someone to take some action. And you've got to think about that first. At the end of 60 minutes, you're not going to have infused 60 minutes of knowledge into their head. You're going to get 1 to 3 things tops that they're going to walk away with remembering after the week is over. Make them count and have everything you talk about revolve around getting those 3 things in there. You want to inspire them. You want them to think that whatever it is that you're doing is so freaking cool that they can't wait to do it, however it takes. You can get creative, use props, use visuals, use your words, but do what it takes to inspire people. Right? My colleague Stephen Cohen comes in with giant binders to visualize exactly what he does, to inspire you. Oh, now I can see it in my head, and I've now wound this together. Seeing it in your head is really important. Because we are storytelling animals. Lists of facts do relatively little for us. It's hard to be inspired with, did you know that Credential Guard exists? Here's the architecture of Credential Guard. Here's blah, blah, blah. But you know what really resonates? Here's an adversary. Here's what they tried to do. Watch it. It's failing. It's an action and adventure movie. Oh, here's the adversary over here. Here's a defender over here. And they're winning. And we have good. And we have evil. And we have a hero. And we have a story, and I can walk away going, oh, did you hear about the time that guy, that Peppa Pig, tried to break into the arsenal over here, and we defended against it using these brand new credential theft mitigations that we could put in place, and blah, blah, blah. It becomes a narrative. How can you